many families that I dealt with about 5 years ago moved from here and now are not only moved to De Leon Springs, but later on moved to the DeLand area, which surprised me because there was a large, strong Spanish-Mexican community, and they were, some families were really close with a lot of the people here. And in fact, one particular family, Mr. and Mrs. Gomez, Maria Gomez, was quite a leader in the community. But I took a trip around the whole area, and they're right, the housing is terrible. Yes. And what has upset me from my visitations has been that some of our Mexican migrant people are living in hovels. They have no indoor hot water. They have a little bit of indoor plumbing. My foot went through the living room floor. The windows in the house were broken. And this family is paying $130 a month to live in a place where I don't think I'd even put animals in it. But they have a good job with the fernery here in this area, so this is the only housing they could find, so they continue to stay. So that's the reason I think a lot of our Mexican people have moved down. Okay, now Crescent City, I was talking to the principal over there, and I was amazed at how many Mexican students he has.
Mm-hmm.
Elementary. There are 800 students in the school, and he has, just roughly guessing, maybe around 200, if not more, Mexican students. They have really moved up into the Crescent City. But the reason for that, again, is the housing. They have housing. And for some reason, the people around here really like living in this area. I would speak very highly for some of the fern owners that I personally know and whose families, whose children attend our school, really are good to their migrant workers. And so they like working for a good employer,
right.
I think, okay? And I think that's why they want it desperately to stay in the area. Also, the families form kind of a nice, neat spirit, or community spirit, so that when I speak to the Solises or the Piedras or the Puentas or the Martinezes, they have a nice feeling among, you know, each other. Yes. In the community. I have had some meetings here at school to speak strictly just to the Mexican community, to talk to them about school and how important school is for their children, and how much I want them, the mothers and fathers, to be part of our school. And so now I told them that we would have our parent-teacher organization meetings we'd conducted in two languages. We would talk in, the meeting is presented in English and Spanish. So they have been attending our PTO meetings. In fact, we have an enrollment of 175, and I usually have over 200 people here for our PTO meetings. So we're really, really pleased with that. Yes. Another meeting we had is we had a situation back here in October where a couple of Mexican men got into a fight with some white men, and it was put in the paper as a racial situation. And we know, we have, 3 years I've been here, we work very, very hard to develop good relationships among all the people, the black, white, and Mexican people in this community. And we resented the article stating that, you know, this was a real racial situation. So I had a big meeting here at school concerning community problems, because the community problems affected my students. In fact, some parents came here and pulled their children out of my school the following day to keep them home for that week because they were afraid. I convinced them, finally, most of them, to leave their children in school or to bring them back the next day, that they would be absolutely guaranteed safety at school. And everything was okay.
My impression is there's a lot more tension in Cibola than in the other areas, partly because of the, I think, demographic. That storm, I mean, Picada, I think,
where is that storm?
Is that right? The one at the market, right across from me anyway?
Yes. Tyler's?
Tyler's, again. In the community, it's called Mexicana. I always feel like a lot of tension there. I've been in there several different times. I just chatted with people, and I asked them to photograph the peanuts and the food waves in the store, and you know, no problem. And that's what I'm doing. But somebody else, one of the women came inside the checking out and just grilled me, you know, what was I doing there, and why they're taking the pictures. And I always feel a lot of tension when I go in there. I don't, I haven't felt that in other areas.
Right. Well, for some reason, that Tyler store, now they have, it's not owned by the Tylers, it used to be. Now they're renting it to this man, and I think he's trying very hard to make a go of it. But it was a gathering of what I would call the rednecks, okay? And since their emphasis has been on the Mexican community, they haven't honed in on the black community, okay? But it's like that store is like their territory. Now, we're working hard on seeing if we can resolve the problem, and we talked to the police when they were here on that situation. There's where the fight took place in October, okay? And for... Where is that store?
Is that right? The one at the market right across from the anyway?
Yes. Tyler's?
Tyler's, okay. In the community, it's called the Mexicana. I just always feel a lot of tension there. I've been in there several different times. I just chatted with people, and I asked about the program. Well, we can do that. There's no food, ways, and the stores, and no problem. That's what I was doing. It. But somebody else, one of the women came inside the church, and that just grilled me. You know, what was I doing there? I always feel a lot of tension when going there. I don't like myself in other areas.
Right. Well, for some reason, that Tyler store, now they have, it's not owned by the Tylers. It used to be. Now they're renting it to this man, and I think he's trying very hard to make a go of it. But it was a gathering of what I would call the rednecks. Okay? And since their emphasis has been on the Mexican community, they haven't honed in on the black community, okay? But it's like that store is like their territory. Now, we're working hard on seeing if we can resolve the problem, and we talked to the police when they were here on that situation. There's where the fight took place in October, okay? And for some reason, being such, if you notice, we are the smallest. Pearson's much larger. Crescent City is much larger, okay? And so, in a small community, all you have to have is a little bit of tension among a couple of families, Mexican and white, and it just seems to permeate everybody. But this is what everybody resents, that because there is a faction here between one white family and a couple of white families and a couple of Mexican families. You know, it's a carryover through the whole community, but being so small, you're going to feel that tension. And I don't know why, but Tyler's store has been that way. Where, no, because I've come in, in fact, I had some parents call me to tell me, and these are white men that they're seeing outside the store smoking pot. Okay. And I told them that for them to call the police. Now, I have come in the mornings, and it's improved somewhat, but I've come in the mornings, and I used to see five or six white guys with the caps and all their trucks. And, you know, even myself, even though I'm Spanish American, but they consider me white, if I walked in there, I would be hesitant.
I got followed in the store. I had stopped to do something. I was waiting for this car of gotten rednecks to pull out, you know, and I sat there and they weren't going to pull out, and I had to go home. And so then I just pulled out and got right behind me. And then followed me all the way across the city. I got out of this supermarket shot and jammed me. But ever since I have not wanted to get anywhere tonight.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. See, that's what I'm saying. There's a really raunchy group of white trash that we have. And it's the white trash. I'll be honest with you, it's not really Mexican trash. It's white trash. It's a small group, but it's causing a lot of problems. Now, my problem is I live 37 miles from here. I live in Ormond Beach. And if I stay here for any night meetings, I usually have one of my teachers impose on one of my teachers to stay with me. I don't mind staying. It's just I don't like traveling the roads at night by myself. But, you know, we will have one more meeting here, a large meeting before school closes, of just community problems. I'm having a PTO meeting March 28th where our children will come here and perform. They're just so cute. But that's totally school-oriented. But I'd like to have one more meeting before school is out to talk about community problems. It's about June 8th or June 9th. Okay. Okay. The thing that there are prejudice problems. There's just no doubt about it. The fern owners I spoke of who have children in our school are the ones that work so well with the Mexican people.
Well, the prisoners and missing civilians don't provide housing and they generally care for them. And there's a lot of prisoners where they provide trailers
and apparently some do and some don't. Or if they do, it's limited housing. Mm-hmm. You know, they can house just so many people. Because that house and that dump I talked to you about, I don't know who this family works for, but that area is just... See, there's an area here in Seville, I don't know if you're aware of it, it's called the Quarters, and that's strictly the black area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we have a few Mexican families.
That's where the Piedras live. Well...
Yeah, the Piedras?
Are you in Piedras? That were right next to the church?
No, okay. No. I have a Piedra family, but they live in that dump I told you about.
And this,
no, this is not. This is a little kind of isolated thing. Okay. And the gentleman that owns the property, or owns whatever, is a black person in the community that owns that, for all those houses out there in the black quarters that some of the Mexican people are renting from. Now, generally speaking, there's still some racial problems sometimes between my black and Mexican students. You know. But which occur in the neighborhood. We have worked very, very hard as a school and teamwork where I had to put a force situation when I first came here in combining groups together, because when I walked on that school ground, I saw things that just made my hair stand on end, and that is I had my black students over here playing, Mexican students over here, and my white students over here, and I met with the entire school body. We're one school, we're one team, we work together. And so I integrated them in different things that I did. If they wanted to play any game out there, kickball or football, they could only play on condition that it was a mixed group. All right? When we sit in the cafeteria, if they want to sit with their friends on Friday at a certain table, during the week they're going to sit where I tell them to sit. So it's a mixed group situation. Okay, language, I've talked... It's taken me a while to develop the trust of my Mexican students because they don't identify. They identify with me now, but when I first came, they looked at me just as a gringa. Ta-da, okay? Even though I was born, raised, my family, all Spanish, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Are you Mexican?
No, Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I do speak some Spanish. It needs to be improved, and I really need to work on it. But I've developed, kids know now that I really believe in them and I trust them, et cetera, et cetera. So now they will not speak so much Spanish out in the school ground. When I first came here, you go by a group of Mexican kids and they're all talking in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So our emphasis is on the English language for everybody.
But there's
no
college.
Oh, no,
I mean,
no.
Like in the old days in Texas, yeah, people would be
struck. No, oh, no. We have no, fact, the new employee I was just talking to got a earful of how I the children here, and I'm going to exaggerate, but they're almost sacred to me. Nobody harms my kids. No one. And if I hire a staff of people, they have to assure me that I work with them, and I have people that are no longer on the staff, that they really care about the children in this school, and we have to have a special love and care for these children. And we have no negative punishment. Okay. What I do when I hear the children trying to use Spanish, you know, English, I just praise them. Or if I hear them talking in Spanish, I'll say something to them in Spanish, and they'll laugh, mm-hmm. You know. And so I said, come on, let's keep trying. So it's a thing of motivation because it's for their welfare. I want them to be able to go anywhere in this state. And when they go into a grocery store, a department store, they can proudly go up there and talk to that lady or that man in English, and in correct English. Because I think one of the biases that we have in America is when a person has an accent or speaks different, we tend to look at them differently. So, and we've had for the last 2 years, which we've never had before in the school, Mexican kids who have been on the honor roll. Okay. And so that has worked some of the prejudices out that the Mexican kids can't learn. They're not as smart. And that has really worked out very well to have examples of honor roll people who, you know, it has nothing to do with nationality, whether you're smart or not. Yes. Well, I had a bilingual program which I did away with because it was doing more harm to my Mexican kids than it did good, because it kept them talking Spanish. All right? Now, if I had a teacher here that some way I could work her schedule who could speak fluent Spanish, I would have her go to the classroom and teach all our children some Spanish. I did that 1 year for a little while, had that person go to the classroom and teach some Spanish. And the kids were delighted. Now, when I think the greatest, one of the greatest signs that I have seen of good things coming has been when I get Mexican kids here now, like I just had two boys from Mexico who didn't speak a word of English. It has amazed me, especially with the older kids, it's amazed me to see them take that Mexican student and take him around and say, you know, tree, tree. And then they say it in Spanish, and the kid finally say, the kid would say it in Spanish, and they would try and say it in Spanish. Then the Spanish kid would try to say it in English. And they were working together in acceptance of, or, you know, helping them. So while they're trying to teach them English, they would say, teach us some Spanish. So that's, you know, a very healthy attitude in the school. We have tried, we've had programs where we have included songs from different nationalities, especially some Mexican songs. We had some Christmas songs and they were done in Spanish. And we're trying to teach a respect for each of the cultures, respect for the family life. I want to tell you that I don't have, let me think right off, any Mexican student in an exceptional student class. Now, I would say as a whole, my Mexican students have a rare situation that many of our white and black families have lost. They have a family. They have the same mother and the same father, and they live in the same household with their brothers and sisters. We have so many broken homes that a lot of my students don't even know who their real father and mother are, but the Mexican students do. And that family life helps to keep a certain stability in that child. Even though they move around, they're still with their family. Mm-hmm. That I think helps to prevent emotional problems.
Well, how migrant is the population, the Mexican population, in terms of school?
All right. Okay, now, that's another thing. It's another issue that I've worked so hard on. And right now, I'm going to be very frank with you, even if I'm on a tape. I'm trying to get take a father to court because I've begged him for 3 years. Their children are bright. Oh, are they bright? To keep his children in school. And he keeps pulling them out. I had one, this girl who's supposed to be in sixth grade is now in Texas. Last year she missed 86 days out of 180 days. Okay? I have sent my social work over there. I've sent my migrant home liaison over there. You know, I have been over to the house 10,000 times. He has been over here and I've pleaded with him, please, the children must be in school. All right. I was informed 2 weeks ago, and so I have a special meeting tomorrow with the lady who's in charge of social services, head of the social services in Volusia County, that he's not going to send her to school anymore. She's a bright girl in sixth grade, and he's pulled her out. Okay. Now, he's the only parent that's done this. The rest of the parents have remained stable. In fact, one family used to pull their children out for a month in October to go to Mexico. Okay, now they take them at Christmas time. Okay, they do miss. They go out the 2 weeks for Christmas, and they stay out one more week, and they come back. So they only miss 1 week or a week and a half. Before, they used to miss a whole month. So our attendance has improved a lot.
Okay, but you're saying that it's really not a migrant population in terms of seasonal work.
Right. They leave. They do. We do have migrants, but not as many as we used to have. They're settling down in the community. Okay.
Yeah, that's been my impression.
Yes.
I thought that the Jacksonville article painted a picture of a migrant population that was moving through. Mm-hmm. My impression is that the people are settling in the community.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And so that's still some movement, right? Because of the...
Right. They move. Most of mine have been moving and come back. They just go. They're gone for the summer, okay? But they get back here. And when the school year starts, they're back here. And they're back. They're with us the whole year.
Are they working in the summer?
I don't know if they go to Texas or if they go to Mexico, all right? But they are working, but they're working somewhere. But the great thing is that they're getting back here. And so I've also talked to the Baptist minister and the Catholic minister and the priest, Mexican. Yes, and also with Oscar Trevino. And they preach for me at school, at their pulpits to get their kids to school, get their kids to school.
I don't know. Okay. I went over there and
I don't know, but he has been a great deal of help to me, and so has his wife, Pearl.
What's the denomination?
Baptist, I think.
Baptist?
Uh-huh. Which surprised me, because
I
might be. Be honest with you, I don't know. I just assume, I'm making that assumption. But I always thought Mexican people were Catholic, you know, because that's how I grew
that's
up.
Culturally, they're usually Catholic.
Uh-huh.
And I've noted in the community that people seem to make a split. They kind of write off the Protestant Mexicans as not being Mexican.
I know. I know. It's funny.
I'm real curious. I've kind of stayed away from it until now because I didn't know what effect it would have on me going into that environment.
Well, we have, although it got a little dangerous, the teachers, we all have the primary teachers, when they have their Christmas party, have the piñatas. But it got a little dangerous. Right. But like I said, you know, they have stories. And right now, our big unit in Mexico, when you come back in May, you'll be able to see a lot of things that have been going on. We're going to study Mexico for the next 3 months as an entire school. That'd be great.
I could get a little unit together. So I worked in
the mariachi bands where I came from in Colorado, you know, and I'm Catholic, of course. And it was a great way to celebrate, you know, the service. But when I first came here, I did go to the Catholic service and also the Protestant service. And afterwards, I spoke with the people and told them I was very proud to be principal of Seville Public School, and I wanted them to know that the school was always open to all of them. They're all welcome to come and visit our school, have lunch in the cafeteria, attend any of our PTO meetings. And we do let the people know through our newsletter every month and through the bulletin board at the post office, so kind of keep them informed about what's going on at school. But I think the thing that I saw is you know, the developing is that the white people here that I was working with trying to understand the culture of the Mexican people. I mean, wanting to understand it, you know. And so when I had that, what I call a town meeting, several of the white men who are leaders in the community met with some of the Mexican men. And I just said, excuse me, gentlemen, but I do have to lock the school, because they were so busy, you know, exchanging concerns and ideas with one another. And that, to me, was a great sign of things to come, even though we still have this little problem. Like I said, you know, it's almost a blessing if Tyler Store could not be dismantled or something rebuilt there. But that is, and it's been always a hot spot for everybody. I don't know how anybody goes in there, but why? You know, like I said, it's exchanged hands, and the man was here for the town meeting. He came, the owner of the store, I don't remember his name. And he really said, I really want to cooperate. And, you know, I wasn't to blame for any of this, and he's not. You know, he can't help it who comes in his store. But it's just this little group that stands in front of that store that, you know, like, and it's true, see. You have to say self-preservation for this community, even for the Mexican community. They're afraid of strangers out. That's why they looked at you as a stranger, okay? Now, they knew that even though word spread out to the community, I had been here before, so that kind of helped before I got this position. But the people still tested me to see, you know, how are you going to treat our community? And when they find out that you care very much about their children, and you do care about the town, whether I live here or not, I'm always talking about, people think I live in Seville the way I talk, you know, then they accept you. But like the other situation that occurred here was the Garza boy, the 7-year-old Garza boy that was shot by a white girl, okay? They weren't even from here. You see, and yet Seville got that name, okay? And all you need for that little situation to give us more fuel to this bunch. Okay. Now, that group, they broke into my gym my first year here. And I called the police. And on weekends, and that's why never would I thought I'd ever have to lock gates to the school. I have every gate locked every night before I go home. Because they used to come in with their cars and do wheelies in the schoolyard and rip our schoolyard up. And also, they didn't steal anything in the gym. They broke in the gym, but they played basketball, and beer cans were all over, and cigarettes. Well, there's no way that's going to be around the schoolyard. So the police really worked with me. We finally got rid of them. But see, they gravitate somewhere else. And like I said, in a small town, you're going to notice that much more. They can get lost in a big place, but in a small town, you just notice it much more.
But how long have you been principal?
3 years. Uh-huh. Yeah. Like I told you, I worked here about 5 years ago as a migrant coordinator for about 5 months.
5 years as a migrant coordinator?
Yes, what I did is what Mr. Johnson does. I don't know if you met him over at, you should meet Jim Johnson and Betty Seibel at McGinnis. He is hired by, it's in De Leon Springs.
School?
Yes. McGinnis Elementary is the name of the school, but the town is De Leon Springs.
Yeah.
He's hired by Chapter 1 in the migrant program. See, I have a migrant program here, and I have a certified teacher who works with my limited English-speaking students, okay, or non-English-speaking students. And she comes here for 2.5 hours a day, and then she goes over to Pearson, and she works in the afternoon over there, simply because I don't have a large group. She has a handful of little children that have limited English, because most of our Mexican kids being here, staying here, being stable here, have really picked up the English language. Then we have Mr. Johnson and Mrs. Seibel, and they go around recruiting migrants. They go around identifying them. And they identify them, and they go to the families if they're new, and they register them. And they're put on a computer, and that information goes to Little Rock, Arkansas. That brings in money to the state to help us fund that migrant language reading program. No, because the people and word of mouth spreads. We never ask them for document. That's when you fill out the form. It's just no. There's okay. The same thing here with my parents' register. I don't care whether they're legal or not legal. I want those children at school.
Yeah, well, that's. Yeah.
No. You know, I'm not here. You know, but no, I'm not. And so apparently, Mr. Johnson and Mrs. Seibel haven't had any trouble because they've had. We've recruited identified quite a few. And the money helps, pays most of all, in essence, it pays the bureaucrats, but, you know, it does bring in funding for a very fine program. The kids in the migrant program have an Apple II computer and language masters and a lot of good equipment that they
and that's
use.
Based in Baton Rouge?
Well, it used to be based here. They just moved down 2 months ago because of the
population.
Migration of my Mexican people going toward there looking for housing. So the main for them to come all the way up here, when your center is between Pearson and De Leon Springs, I hated to lose them, but Mr. Johnson can tell you some more about the migrant people and Mrs. Seibel. We've had a couple of times, and again, it's just a matter of time. And time is so crucial. We've had a couple of Mexican dinners here where the Mexican parents sponsored it, and they ate in the cafeteria, and the Mexican mothers did all the cooking. And we had a very nice turnout of black, the Mexican mothers. Mrs. Solis was involved, and Mrs. Gomez was involved. I guess so, because Maria wasn't here anymore. Let's see, there's another one.
These are Seville family?
Yes, Seville family.
I know more about Pearson and things.
Okay. They came in and fixed the dinner, and like I said, we had a good turnout from all the people. In the community, black, white, you know, and it was really nice. One thing the Mexican people do like to do, and it's too bad they don't have a real strong leader in the community, is they like to get together for whatever the occasion is. They like that camaraderie or that community spirit, which is, you know, really nice. But my objective in the school is to try to give each of our students the best education possible. One, as I told you, mastering the English language, learning to read and write. Okay, building up a good self-image that these youngsters feel very good about themselves and who they are, and that they're all very well accepted. We just had, for the first time in the history of Seville, we had a Laotian family move in about a month ago. And again, it pleased me to see how the children readily accepted them. Not as different, but as some neat people that they could learn about. And so that some of my Laotian children have already taught the children some of that artwork that you do, folding paper and different, you know, some of their customs from Laos. And so this builds up a really good spirit among the students.
Does that family speak English?
Yes.
The
children do. The father speaks very little. But, and their English is limited, you know. But in order for the children, we applied for a grant. Whether we'll get it or not is yet remain to be seen. But the grant I applied for was called a safer school. I knew I would have had the walls bursting, but for just inviting a few, and they asked, "Well, could I bring this person?" It ended up about 50 or 75 people, and I wanted it a small group. But we had the lieutenant of the police force, captain of the police force, and two of his lieutenants. We had a black minister, the Catholic priest, and Oscar Trevino here, and a Protestant minister here, who are main leaders in this area, and seeing what we could do to work to provide a better community. We still have the problem. The reason those guys hang out there and get away with a lot is we have very little police protection. Very little. You see, this is not a municipality. This is a country, and this area, Seville, is not incorporated as a town or anything. So they don't get police protection. You know, they come up here, county police, they come up here, and if you have, like, that incident occurred where that young boy was shot, it took the police 45 minutes to an hour to get here. Whenever there's the situation in Tyler, it takes, so you see the police, they're limited, their funding is limited, and they don't get up here enough to, you know, when we do call on them, then they'll start patrolling the area for a while, and that situation at Tyler's store disappears. And there's like a little bit of fresh air. People feel good about it. You don't see that group hanging out there. But then pretty soon the police disappear because they're not back here, and they come gravitating again to their power base, you know. And I think if we had good police protection, I think that would soon be eliminated. That's our problem. So we're trying to figure out how we could get better police protection. We talk about a neighborhood watch among the Mexican, black, and white families. You know. So I don't know. I guess I get optimistic when I see what's happening with the children at school. And I feel if our children are showing great academic improvement, good self-image, getting along well with each other, that is a sign that somehow in the community, the families are communicating with each other. It seems to be working out. The minute I see tension, et cetera, among our students, and I knew there's something wrong back home because it's not it here. You know? And we have rules, but the rules apply to every single human being. And every human being is very important, no matter what's your name or where you come from, what color skin you are. And the children know this. We've proved it over and over again. So I think that there is progress in the community if we could eliminate just that little group. I don't think you'd see the tension as much. About 670 people. Yes.
What about the percentage of Mexicans who are black, white?
Okay. I have 175 students. Now we can do it mathematically, we can do it on the computer. I have 35 Mexican students out of 175. I have about, 50, 60 black students, and then the rest are white. But it's about a fourth or more than a fourth of Mexican students. There are Mexican students in every single classroom. The fourth grade, for some reason, has the largest Mexican student body. And whenever that occurs in any classroom, if you have a lot more blacks or a lot more whites or a lot more Mexican, we zero in on that situation because they do tend, and that's true, it's just human nature, to gravitate to one another. So we work on it. And we say, hey, you don't isolate anybody. They are part of your group. They are part of your class, and so we work on it. So I've been working with the fourth graders because we had about five or six Mexican boys in there. Okay.
How is your continuation of high school? Where did they go to high school?
Okay. Pearson? Taylor, not Pearson, we say Taylor, because that was always a bone of contention. Taylor Junior and Senior High. Okay. That is the only weak area. That this year, of course, I only have one Mexican student in sixth grade. One? Two. But Esteban just came, and he's really learned the English in a month he's been here. But I don't know what will happen to him next year, but Cecilia Vegas is my honor student, and she will go on to Taylor Junior High. And Fanny Gomez last year, who I prayed and begged, and she's at Taylor. I thought she's going to be a dropout. So the parents pull them out. Mm-hmm. And see, right now, like some of my students in sixth grade can be 14 years old or 15 years old. So when they get out, they're turning 16.
Is that the law?
Yes.
Is that
nationally? Yes, nationally. 16, see? So this is why I was trying to say that other student I spoke to you about that the father won't send back. She's 14, okay? And I want her back in school, so I'm... And if I felt if I did that, it would... People in the community, I think there'd be respect for that. More than... It's not a threat. Saying, the school really love our kids. They really want them there. They really care about them, you know?
Really... Elementary school is the most important in the American
child's life. Yes, right. Right. But now, thank goodness through Sarah Brown, she is a director of the federally funded program called Chapter One, she's established a migrant teacher in the high school for the first time. So that Mrs. Johnson, who speaks fluent Spanish, it was so funny. Mrs. Solis brought a family here. She brings them now to me, since I talk Spanish. She brings them, and I knew by just their size that they didn't belong here. They belonged to Taylor High, Junior High. And I said, "No, buenos días, Mrs. Solis." And she said, "Buenos días," you know. And she proceeds to tell me that she's brought these people to register. And so I said, "¿Cuántos años tienen? How old are they?" So I knew they're 15, 16, 17. So I told her that they really had to go to Taylor Junior High and High School to register, but not to worry that Mrs. Johnson would meet him at the front door. In fact, I was going to call right now. Mrs. Johnson would meet him at the front door, and she speaks fluent Spanish. And I told her in Spanish, and she laughed. I told her she was a gringa. They could speak much better Spanish than this Mexicana aquí, you know, that she could speak better than I could, and she laughed. So I picked up the phone, called Mrs. Johnson, and said, "Mrs. Johnson, we have a beautiful Mexican family coming over. Please meet him at the door. Take good care of them. Register them. Make sure the kids are, you know, et cetera." So she did. She called me back and she said, "They're all taken care of. They've all been registered. So that's great." Before, they had no one over there, no one to speak Spanish to them. So if we can get that word out to our community.
Is Sarah Brown, is she married?
She's, her headquarters is at Daytona Beach. She's at our, you know, like every school has a county office. Mm-hmm. That's where she is, at the Education and Development Center. And she's over all every Chapter 1 program. No, it's migrant program, and it's also a program, reading and math, for those children who have problems with reading and math. It's a reading program, a math program, and a migrant program. Yeah, and it's all federally funded.
And migrant is black and white.
Migrant is migrant. Whoever goes, you go to the migrant class if you have problems with the English language. That's the, well, you had to be a migrant first, and you had to be a migrant either status 1, status 2, or status 3. You know what that is? Okay, status 1 is just what it means. That means that you have moved around in that 1 year. You're a current migrant one, which means that maybe you left school year in the middle of the year, or you left during the summer, and you took and you took a job. You know, I talk with my hands.
I do too. So I
can. And you take a job. They left here. They left Seville, and they went either to Crescent City, which is crossing the county line. Okay, they left Volusia County and went over to Putnam County to work. That puts them in that they did that within the current 1 year, first year, that like 1985-84. They're called migrant one, status one. Okay, if they haven't moved, but they have moved in the last 2 years, status two. If they haven't moved, unless they've moved in the last 3 years, after that, if they haven't moved, then they stay status three for 4, 5, and 6 years. After 6 years, if they've never moved, either intrastate or interstate, they are no longer to come off. See, I have quite a few children that are Mexican kids that are not migrants. See, that's when people forget. They immediately associate Mexican migrant. No. I have Nicholas Martinez, who's not a migrant. His family's been here for years. Okay? So that's how you get into the migrant program for help with language. Okay? You have to be a migrant and moved in with either first, second, or third year. And you have to have a problem with the English language. So it doesn't make any difference what color you are. Black, white, you know, brown, green, whatever. You still qualify for the program.
That's okay. Crescent City is on Putnam County?
Yes. Okay. It's only 10 miles away. But see, if they cross that line sometime to work, to move, they have to move, though. They don't just travel. If they move over there, relocate, and then come back, that puts them on a migrant one status. Okay? I don't know that principal's name. I can get it for you in a few minutes. But I think you should, if you can get it, I'll give you his telephone number, Mr. Johnson's phone, and you can go speak with him.
Yeah, because I need to go back down to Atlanta this week. I want to get Maria Gomez.
She's delightful. But you should talk to Mr. Johnson and Mrs. Seibel. Now, Mr. Johnson is the teacher in the program, and Mrs. Seibel is the administrative aide. But Betty is Mexican, and she married an Anglo. And Betty speaks, not only does she speak fluent Spanish, but she writes beautiful Spanish. And I really miss having her up there. Yes, and then
no relationship.
In fact, Mr. Johnson does have a wife that teaches in the school system, and she's at Blue Lake, and she's a second grade teacher.
Okay.
No, Mrs. Johnson is, she used to be a high school teacher originally, and then she got into the bilingual program, and so she's real happy going back into a high school setting. And like I said, I don't know where, she got her master's, I believe, in Spanish. She speaks it very well. But it's just great because she has a super attitude toward the migrant people, and I think she'll be a great help in getting us our kids over there and encouraging them and keeping them going in school.
Does she live in the community?
Yes, I think she lives either in Pearson or Leon Springs. You know. But that's the only thing that's I've tried everything, and now that Mrs. Brown has done this, I think will be the salvation, because I've met with the high school principal, Mr. Hill, to see how we could work together to get our Mexican kids from here to there. All right? And he has worked really hard with Mrs. Vivian Charles, his assistant principal, have tried very hard to create a real nice atmosphere to make the people welcome when they walk into school. You know, when people walk in here, they should feel good about walking into school and say, glad to have you here. I'm glad you took time during your busy day to come. Or glad you came here to register your kids. And we always fuss over the kids. When parents come to register new kids here.
Yeah. Is there anybody that's actually in the community that makes note of new people coming in and goes to them?
Mr. Johnson.
No. How would they know if the family showed up?
Well, what he does is Mr. Johnson and Mrs. Seibel make the rounds. And they come and stop and talk to the Mexican families, or they'll talk to Oscar. And they'll say, Oscar, is there anyone new in the area that I should go meet and say hello to and greet them and then identify them and tell them about the school at Seville and get their kids enrolled, et cetera, or can they help them enroll them, or whatever.
Are a lot of people in Seville Mexican families associated with the church?
Yes, I think most of them are. Either with Oscar Davino's church or with Father Jose. Is it Father Jose?
Because
he came to the meeting and he didn't speak a word of English. And I said to him,
I've only spoken to him in Spanish.
I said, Father, yo no puedo hablar muy bien en español. He said, yo no hablo nada en inglés. I said, well, we're going to get along, you know. So, but that's how they keep, you know. And also, Oscar, like I told you, helps me. If he knows of anybody that's new, he'll send them over, he'll bring them over.
Well, I was told that there's another Protestant, predominantly Mexican church now in Crescent City.
Well, that's possible. See, I don't know Crescent City that well. In fact, the only reason I talked to that principal in Crescent City just recently is because one of my Mexican families could not find housing. Their house literally fell apart. So they went over to Crescent City. But they work over here. Mm-hmm. And we discovered that. Well, the county guidelines is they have to move into Crescent City. But I did not want to lose the Hernandez children. When they came to us 2 years ago, they spoke no English at all. And they have made such, and they're real shy children. And they made so much progress in speaking English and feeling good about themselves, you know, the self-identity. I didn't want to lose this work. So I called our county office and I'm trying to call the principal over there. How can I keep my kids here? You know, so we went through all the paperwork, and that's how I was talking about his program. I don't know much about Putnam County. It's a totally different system, however they run it. But he's got a huge school, 800 in that elementary. Mm-hmm. But it'd be interesting to get from his viewpoint what's going on over there. I've never met the man personally. Like I said, I've just talked to him on the phone. Very, very nice. On the telephone.
Are you planning anything for Cinco de Mayo?
No. Well, see, now as we're studying Mexican, with Mexican culture, I'm sure we'll get something ready. What is Cinco de Mayo? It doesn't even ring a bell.
Oh, it's one of the biggest Mexican holidays. It's when the Mexican troops forced the French out and they arrived in Mexico, Puebla.
Yes.
I was told that they were planning something at the high school.
Well, see, as they're studying now, and I'll mention that to Miss Bradley, the media specialist, so she can do a little research on it. Yeah. Okay?
Great.
I'm going to have to
Thank
sign
you.
Off or simply...